Hello, my name's Christian Jones and I'm a journalist within Manx Radio's newsroom. It's fair to say this year has offered an abundance of talking points ranging from Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which is largely attributed to the huge increases in inflation and subsequent cost of living that you and I are seeing on a daily basis. I visited the man in charge of the Isle of Man government who's been in the job for just over a year. Alfred Cannon is the constituency MHK for Aaron Michael and heads up the Council of Ministers. Let's first begin at the start of the year when Russia launched a large-scale invasion of Ukraine on the 24th of February. Countries across the globe have been affected with the rises to gas and fuel prices, which subsequently have seen increased production and freight costs for many sectors. But did government anticipate it would have such a large impact on the Isle of Man too?
You always get caught somewhat by these types of events. They're almost impossible to plan for. Entirely, and it did have significant knock-on consequences, which meant that we had to react very, very quickly. And as soon as the invasion happened, I mean, within days, actually, we had already sort of effectively formed a response group and were meeting to try and understand what the implications would be. And of course, you know, once we became clear that energy was being impacted so extensively, that inflation was speeding up in terms of the rises that were coming through, and recognizing that we were already in a sort of COVID coming, still coming effectively out of COVID, we immediately determined that we would need to have a proper response. That's why within weeks of the invasion, we announced the first round of support to numbers of individuals on our island, and some months after that, we announced that we felt we had no choice but to suppress energy prices, the electricity price, which we've done now. And furthermore, we've continued to give out support payments. I think by the end of January, we will have given out £17 million in additional support. And we will, of course, then be reviewing the situation in terms of what we expect to happen next year. But yes, it is difficult. We can't, I think Alex Allenson has said a number of times, we can't just carry on paying out in these sorts of events. But I think we've certainly tried to help the community through this very, very difficult period, and I hope have made a difference to some people.
The invasion came at a time when Treasury Minister Alex Allenson had already delivered his annual budget, and so the subsequent support packages weren't accounted for. So will this mean nice-to-haves could be scaled back to make up for the £17 million that government has already spent on support for residents who are struggling to make ends meet?
Well, it's only weeks away until the Treasury Minister delivers his budget, and I really don't want to preempt or take away from him. But I think we are facing challenging times. Clearly, money and how we spend it and where we need to spend it now is becoming an increasingly more pertinent question. It's always there in many ways in terms of public finances, but there are definite pressures now creeping in. We spent a lot of money during the COVID period, rightly in my view, supporting the economy, supporting individuals. We needed to do that, but that did put a substantial dent into our reserves. We continue to use our reserves now to support our spending, and the Treasury Minister certainly got a challenge on his hands when it comes to looking forward to next year and how funds are going to be allocated and what that means for reserves and what that means for public spending. But it's also important that we also continue to find the money we need to pursue our economic strategy. We've set out an ambitious economic strategy. I think it's really important from a global perspective now that we try and push the island forward. There's huge, significant competition out there at the moment, as I've said multiple times. On the back of COVID, a lot of countries are looking at their strategies, where the next sets of business is coming from. And alongside that, we've also got challenges around global tax rates. So there's a lot to do, and we do have to make sure that we are running a very tight ship, but we've also got to make sure that we are investing in the right areas to ensure that we've got a strong economy for the future.
Research by members of a Kyiv-based American Chamber of Commerce have predicted the war in Ukraine will likely end next year, but could carry through till 2024. In August, government instructed Manx utilities to freeze electricity prices until March next year to prevent tariffs skyrocketing by up to 90%. But with the research in mind, and from what we've heard from countless people throughout the year, that it takes little time for prices to increase, but significantly longer for them to go back down, is further government support likely to be extended?
It's really difficult for me to say at the moment. I mean, there's so many variables out there at the moment, and I haven't seen that expert comment that the war's going to end next year, but I'd be absolutely delighted if that turned out to be true. I think we do try and track and understand what the sort of forecasts are, financial forecasts, sort of geopolitical forecasts in terms of what might happen. But as you know from this year, prices, costs, inflation, interest rates have moved quite substantially in a number of areas, and particularly energy prices still continue to swing wildly from almost one day to the next. So it's really difficult for me to give any precise or concise answers at the moment. We will review the situation with electricity prices fairly early, I would suggest, in the new year, and certainly we need to determine by April what that looks like for people. I would be surprised if there wasn't a rise in the cost of electricity, but it's going to be a question of how much impact we've seen in terms of the allocation that we made. We made up to £26 million available potentially to cover the effectively subsidised electricity costs. I hope we won't have spent that sort of money, but we'll have to weigh up the situation and make a decision accordingly.
The closure of Ramsay Bakery was one of the next big news moments of the year. It was a sudden announcement which government says it wasn't made aware of, and as of right now, Claire Barber, the Minister for the Department of Environment, Food and Agriculture, says no formal cases have been made by any other business to take over as the island's largest supplier of Manx bread. As we previously heard, costs have soared and businesses have struggled to stay afloat. Many businesses have closed down throughout the year as they weren't able to sustain themselves going forward. So is it possible the island is losing its appeal for prospective business owners and entrepreneurs?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that particular sector, and well, look, it's been tough for everybody, hasn't it? Particularly in what we term the domestic marketplaces, local shops, local restaurants, local businesses. I mean, I think we've seen a number of impacts, you know, as we've talked about, those price impacts really are making life very, very difficult, and supply chains as well, right? So many of the businesses, particularly one or two businesses in my constituency, are finding it difficult sometimes to meet demand because the supply chain is still quite damaged as a result of COVID or failed to recover. I think things are potentially picking up in that respect. But look, it's a very, very hard environment, and we know the impact in terms of the cost of living, and of course that's impacted in people's discretionary spend, and that will make life slightly harder. So I don't think the island's, you know, unattractive. I just think it's tough for everybody. It's not just particularly on the Isle of Man that we've had some, you know, incidents where businesses have had to close their doors. I mean, you've got to take that in the much broader UK, European context as well, in terms of the impacts of that we're all seeing. We're going to continue with our economic strategy. I think the right thing is being done. We've set out an ambitious economic strategy. We understand where and what we need to do to help improve the situation for these businesses, bringing in the additional people, creating the new jobs, brownfield site redevelopment, regeneration in our town centres. All of this type of activity will make a difference for the future sustainability of these businesses. But look, I'm not going to pretend that I don't think that 2023 is going to be equally as tough as 2022, unless these predictions turn right and suddenly there is an end to the war. I just certainly think that would be a step forward. But even if that did finish, there's still a number of financial pressures around, including debt levels, governmental debt levels. Inflation will still have to start to drop away. And then, of course, people will still be dealing potentially with much higher interest rates. So, look, it's not going to be easy, but I think we can still be optimistic on the island that we've got the right platform to get through this, and that if we get it right in terms of our delivering on our economic strategy, we will set some strong foundations for the future.
Around this time was also the point the Dr. Rosalind Ranson Tribunal was taking place. There was also significant failings identified after the result found the former medical director was unfairly dismissed for whistleblowing. At the time it happened, on David Ashford's watch, who was the health minister when Dr. Ransom blew the whistle, something the former chief minister Tony Brown said was ultimately it's the minister that will and should fall. As a result of the findings, David Ashford tendered his resignation from his role as Treasury Minister, which began a seemingly domino effect to the Council of Ministers. All in all, six changes to the table have been made, with many calling into question Mr. Cannon's judgment, with others saying it demonstrates the chief isn't afraid to pull the plug when issues arise that could rock the stability of government.
I think it's one of the critical challenges, actually, is making sure that we have a strong performing government. And actually, in the last few days, I announced that we're going to make some changes at the very, very senior level in terms of potentially bringing in a chief executive officer for the Isle of Man government. The chief secretary's role will go, providing Tim will approve that, putting in a chief operating officer, redesignating the CEOs just to across government to chief officers, and putting in stronger performance management and lines of accountability. And above that, all putting in a new operations performance board. And I think that's what we've really got to focus on as a council, is making sure that we are satisfied that government is performing effectively, efficiently. There's a number of issues throughout the year that have come on the back of industrial tribunals and from other areas that mean that we've had to put a lot of emphasis in terms of focusing on government's performance and how situations and staff performance are managed from government, and we're making those changes. And as far as the council goes, actually, when you think about it, really the change has really been won because a minister effectively has stepped down, David Ashford, and then subsequently saw another minister also choose to step down, and there's been some reshuffling. But look, you know, I think it's important to recognise that, yes, it's nice to have ministers in post for a fairly lengthy period of time, because I think it helps them in terms of both stability, but also helps them to get to grips with their department and try and implement reforms and changes and deliver on government policy. But by the same token, you know, politics is such that there's always likely to be some movement, and some have the view that actually people shouldn't be in positions for extended periods of time, because it makes things complacent and doesn't actually keep sort of the political machine going. And so there's bound to be some changes. I expect there'll be some changes next year as well. But, you know, clearly I'm happy with the performance of the Council of Ministers. I think that we've achieved a huge amount in the last 12 months, and I think we've set ourselves some really ambitious targets for next year.
Currently, Laurie Hooper heads up the Department for Enterprise and the Health Department after Rob Callister was sacked from the role after just over a month in the job. Most people have a second job as a cleaner or waiter, not the health department. So will the baton of the health department be passed over soon, and to who?
I'll make a decision on that in the new year, but look, it's likely that we will be bringing in a new minister pretty early on in the new year.
Could that be David Ashford? He's quite vocal in Keys at the moment.
As I said, we'll make that decision early in the new year.
Okay, so like you said, we've seen some big changes to the top of the civil service. There's a lot of interim status among the chief executive departments. Five out of eight of them are classed as interim, and even the head of government communications, I believe, is interim status. Why is that? Do we like the word interim?
Well, I think there's been a number of changes over the last 12 months, I think, and there were one or two changes before that, but primarily over the last 2 months, I think. You set up a new government, you come in with new plans and policies, and during the course of events, some people have chosen to move on and look for opportunities elsewhere. It's not an ideal situation, but I did say that what we needed to do was re-establish and be firm on what we wanted from the senior leadership in government. I think we've now moved to outline those plans, providing Tim will give approval around the change of role for the Chief Secretary to Chief Executive Officer Isle of Man Government in January. We'll be moving at pace, actually, to start filling all these roles on a permanent basis.
Looking back to the Dr. Ransom Tribunal, a review of the civil service was triggered as a result. Most recently, it's been announced that the role of the Chief Secretary, which is the most senior position within the civil service, is being scrapped and replaced with a Chief Executive role. Meanwhile, there's also the addition of a Cabinet Office Chief Officer. Is the civil service getting bigger?
No, it's not getting bigger. You know, we think this is all will be accommodated within existing structures and within existing budgets There will be some adjustment needed in the Cabinet Office, but the focus now is to replace or to take what is the interim position of Chief Secretary and put that onto a permanent footing. And then we will put in the Chief Operating Officer, and then around that we'll make any adjustments. But it's not our intention to make the civil service bigger.
Moving along to the summer now, which brought a multitude of motorsports events, the Southern 100, the Manx Grand Prix, and arguably the flagship event, the world's famous TT races.
The TT always throws up a lot of unexpected events during the fortnight, and this year was no different, but it was fantastic to have the TT back, I think. Some of the racing was absolutely outstanding, and I know that there's certainly a renewed atmosphere around the TT. It's the type of event that needs to continue to evolve and develop, and certainly there's a lot to think about in the future, but I'm really looking forward to seeing TT 2023.
But with the announcement that TT 2023 would have a revised schedule, people have described the changes out of touch, and a petition arose amassing almost 2,500 signatures calling for the schedule not to be modified. The Enterprise Minister hopes the change will generate an extra £6 million to the island's economy and boost the tourism sector by bringing an additional 10,000 visitors within 3 years' time. So will the change cause more damage to the TT than it's worth?
There's always some change needed, I think, with all these types of events. And I think you'll see with sporting events around the globe, I think there's always a renewed emphasis in terms of the way they're presented and perhaps in the way that they take place. And people vary things from time to time. And I think it's right that we shouldn't be afraid to try and make the event a better event. I think there's evidence to suggest that people travel around these times. It's more likely to work effectively with a bit of a break in the middle, and to try and get sort of almost two full weekends, if you like. Or to fill the weekends around the event, and that's the objective. And I hope it works. And if it doesn't, then people will, the organisers will have to just to rethink a bit about what they will do for the following year. But the decision is based on evidence in terms of travel patterns and when people do and don't come to the event and when they leave the event. So the evidence is there, and good luck to them.
Between the summer and up till now, industrial action has been brewing. It's not something that's new to the island, though. Unions have been lobbying and negotiating with government for a number of years, even in the Quayle administration. However, we've begun to see schools ask year groups to remain at home, as they're unable to determine how great an impact industrial action will have on their schools. It began with action short of strike, which saw teaching staff refuse to cover a 20-minute break that in itself forced some children to be asked to stay at home as they weren't able to safely cover break times. However, most recently, teachers have been on the picket lines after the NASUWT announced 6 strike dates in clusters of 2 at a time. But other unions, Prospect and Unite, were also there in solidarity with them and said they can't rule out strike action in the future. The UK is seeing escalations in union action being taken across a multitude of sectors, ranging from teachers, nurses, ambulance, and even border force walking out. The UK has the option of calling in the military, who aren't legally allowed to strike, to make up the numbers, and it's expected that they will be at the airports carrying out passport checks on the border. But the Isle of Man doesn't have that option, so is it a worry for government that the ongoing dispute over paying conditions could branch out to other sectors?
Of course, there is a lot of industrial unrest in the UK at the moment, but I think we've made some really, really positive strides forward. I think, you know, given that government budgets are so under pressure, but I've been delighted that actually the majority of other unions or the other teaching unions have taken the pay award, which effectively offered them up to 11.9%. I think cumulatively over the last 2 years or so, teachers have received something in the region of between 10% and 18%. Depending on their grades. We've now got teachers starting salary at £36,000 as opposed to, I think, in the mid-20s in the UK. We've put in London weighting also in terms of the salary banding that's been applied to teaching staff. So we're totally focused on improving conditions for our teachers, and this government's position is that we absolutely value teachers. We value the delivery of education and want education and education facilities to be the best that they can be. So to find Nasiewicz continuing to bring about industrial action to the detriment, I might add, of their teaching colleagues, but more importantly to the detriment of children's education, given the progress that's been made, really is completely unjustified and uncalled for. And I can find no reasonableness at all in their continued arguments, and absolutely happy to carry on negotiating, but not in the continued face of strike action. And as I said the other day, we are going to really have to seriously consider the position of this government when it comes to continuing to validate, if you like, and allow this continued disruption to children's education, particularly after the COVID years has caused so much or caused so many problems for our children.
And the starting salary for teachers is about £36,000 a year. That's quite a significant amount more than a lot of people who are on minimum wage. From their perspective, I don't think they have a lot of sympathy.
I think the Nasiewicz Union, and let me be clear, it's one union, but it's enough in terms of membership to cause real problems in terms of the ability of head teachers to run their schools when Nasiewicz are walking out on strike. I mean, clearly we're looking to deduct the pay from striking teachers, and I'll be looking to make sure that is properly and effectively done when they strike. But as I said, from a government perspective, and I made it clear, we have not just been sitting on our hands and thumbs and trying, and doing nothing about trying to settle the industrial unrest. We've made such significant progress forward that the continued action just can't really be justified, and it'd just be irresponsible of us now just to continue to sit by and watch this happen when Nasiewicz appear to have no real grounds for claiming the significant levels of pay they're increasing, 30%, but also they must recognise that government can't possibly afford to meet that level of pay demand, and also treat everybody else in the public sector with some respect and equity.
The local negotiating secretary called for Minister Julie Edge to come to the table with her for whether on record or off record. She said it wouldn't be appropriate for a minister to go to the table with her. What would your response be if she decides she wanted to go and do that?
Well, that's up to, the minister has to make certain decisions, and we do try to keep these negotiations at arm's length with professional bodies to avoid, I suppose, conflicts arising in the future. But the minister will have an oversight and an understanding of what is going on, and clearly will also have the recognition that of the budgetary pressures that the Department of Education and the government is under. As I said, we've made so much progress with teachers. In fact, out of all the public sector groups, I would suggest they've had by far the most attention when it comes to looking after their pay and conditions. And as I said, on that basis, I think to carry on striking when you've clearly got a government who's been openly acknowledging that it needs to make some changes and has made some real progress is not justifiable.
And schools have recently written to parents and saying that students will have to stay at home. Are you worried about the long-term impact that this will have on education?
Of course I am. I mean, I think this is just really not tolerable. I don't understand that this action continues to carry justification. And I think this is the point I'm making. I mean, fair enough. Yeah, I expect workers need rights. They need some protection. And I think often in these big public sector organisations, they need proper representation when it comes to negotiating. I absolutely accept all that, but you can't continue to accept the level of damage that has been caused to children's education and the manner in which people are, conducting themselves in terms of the attention that they're paying to children and the overall quality, therefore, of education that's been offered.
Throwing back to June, an educational researcher published a 100-page document compiling with the aid of Freedom of Information requests, which went into great detail demonstrating extensive loss to students' education as a result of the pandemic. In the UK, Ofsted carry out annual inspections of schools and give them a grading which ranges from inadequate to outstanding. The Isle of Man doesn't have an independent regulatory body or Ofsted equivalent whose job it is to scrutinise schools. Based on how passionately the Chief Minister speaks of education and the damage that strikes are causing to children's educations off the back of COVID, why not?
In our island plan, when we first started this administration last year, one of the key headlines was to bring about and implement a quality assurance scheme for our schools, particularly our secondary schools. There, a lot of work has been undertaken on that in the last 12 months. And I know in the next few months into the new year in 2023, we're going to do a lot to explain what that quality assurance scheme looks like and what it means for the quality of education on the island. But that's not to exempt us, if necessary, bringing in someone like Ofsted if we feel there's a specific area that needs real examination. But I think there's been a recognition that we need some level of measure of what's going on in our education system. There's been now, you know, a significant period of time where we really haven't had that, or there's certainly been pushback against grading the schools effectively on examination results. But if we are looking for a well-rounded education system, if we are looking to achieve, and the work that KPMG did in terms of compiling our economic report suggested that our standards were starting to fall in this area. I think it's important that we get ourselves up to date, and that's why this quality assurance scheme now is going to be, I hope, a significant step forward in terms of us benchmarking what's going on in the education system, but also helping to improve the way that schools are delivering a well-rounded education to our children.
Manx Radio has previously anonymously been told by teaching staff that some children are feral and that drugs are rife within schools, and one parent is even having to pay off other pupils to ensure their kids stay out of it. We've also heard from the police recently that there's a greater prevalence of drugs within schools. So have previous administrations been unwilling to form an Ofsted equivalent because they're scared of what it may find?
I think there's been this view adopted that measuring, if you like, schools is not healthy, and that it puts a lot of strain on pupils and teachers. I think I can partially understand some of that sentiment, but frankly, not to have any kind of quality assurance really is not, in my view, an acceptable position. That's why, you know, as a council, we agreed that a quality assurance scheme was needed, and we are intending to do that on a scheme for the island. Based on contributions and an understanding of what we think is going to be best overall in terms of producing well-rounded education system, but also, as I said, understanding what is actually happening in our schools. We will make clear in the next few months in 2023 what that quality assurance scheme looks like and what that's going to mean. And if it needs strengthening further, then we need to examine that and be in a position to do so.
And to round everything off, what are Mr. Cannon's top priorities going into 2023?
I don't think there is just one. I mean, we have to carry on and resolve problems in the health system in terms, doing our healthcare transformation. As I said, we need to move forward now with education, and we need to keep focused on our economic strategy and continuing to make sure that we are investing in the future of the island and bringing forward our plans for brownfield sites regeneration and starting to push forward now with our economic plans for the 5,000 new jobs. And alongside that, we've got the critical question of climate change, renewable energy. I'm afraid it's a really big agenda. There's a number of significant priorities, and we need to be tackling each of them carefully, in a careful and considered manner. But we do need to get on and start making progress in all these areas now.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Little Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.